Welcome to the Dynamics Hot Dish, the podcast where Ashley Steiner, Allie Nelson, and Liz McLennan dish up the latest news and insights about Dynamics and the Power Platform. Join us to explore business applications and low-code development with tips, tricks, and real-world experiences. So grab a seat at the table and let's dig in.
All right, so we are back for our highly anticipated follow-up episode. We're going to be talking about the Power Platform today and what that is and kind of going over all of the various parts of it like we did with Dynamics 365 on our last episode. And before I forget, don't forget to like and subscribe. Find us on all social media platforms, including now TikTok. I even think we're on Threads, the new and exciting social media site out there. Also, like and subscribe us on YouTube. Get notifications of when we post our new content. We post every other week, but sometimes we like to throw out something interesting and post on our off weeks. So make sure you like and subscribe. So getting into our topic for today, we ran out of time on our last one, which I don't think would surprise anybody. We're going to talk about what the Power Platform is. So Allie, you had wrapped us up on our last episode talking about what the five different areas of the Power Platform are. Do you want to recap us?
Yeah. All right. So the five different applications, if you will, that we'll talk about with the Power Platform are, I don't know why I hesitate every time. It's like, I know all of these, but every time I'm like, five,
do you need
wait,
help?
Which one?
No. They all start with power.
Power. Yeah. So,
surprise.
Power Apps, Power Automate, Power BI, Power Pages, Power Virtual
Power
Agents.
Virtual Agents.
And that was even alphabetical. Good job, Allie.
Awesome.
All right. So diving into each of those, we'll kind of talk about what each one are. And I think kind of correlating it to our previous conversation, there is obviously some overlap, I would say, definitely on the CE side of Power Platform. So who wants to take the first one? Let's just do it in alphabetical order, like Allie mentioned. Who wants to tackle Power Apps? Probably the easiest one for us.
I'll take that one.
Liz is like, I'm all over it.
Yeah, I can do this one. So there's two types of Power Apps. So it's basically a low-code, no-code way to build an app for your organization. So the first kind of misconception I encounter all the time is people hear app and they think like consumer app in your app store, like iPhone, Android, but you need a Power Apps or Dynamics license to access the Power App. So it's meant to be used internally. You have to authenticate. You have to be a licensed user. We will talk about ways you can bring this data and this functionality externally to a broader audience, but that's not what Power Apps does. So there's two types of Power Apps. There's model-driven apps and Canvas apps. Canvas apps are basically a blank slate. You have full control over the UI, UX, and you are building out the app however you want it to look, which has its pros and cons. It takes a little bit more time to build it because you do have to make all those design decisions. But one of the plus sides of Canvas apps is that you can connect to any data source, a lot of data sources. How many connectors are there these days? Like hundreds, thousands?
I thought it was over 700. Is it in the thousands already?
Well, a lot. We can put it in the show notes. But you aren't limited to the Dataverse. So that's the big thing, is that you can connect to basically anything. Whereas with a model-driven app, you have to be your data source, or Dataverse has to be your data source for that. And then you're restricted to kind of the standard UI of a model-driven app, which is like a left navigation bar, like a ribbon or a command bar across the top, and you're kind of working within that framework. You do have some control, like you can add custom icons, and you obviously get to define what your lists and like forms look like, but you don't have the same level of UI UX control you do as in a Canvas app. And if any of you are familiar with Dynamics CRM, that is basically a model-driven app. So those are really interchangeable. If you're used to building or doing configuration work in the apps in CRM, that would be the same for building a custom model-driven app. Is there anything I missed or that either of you want to add?
No, I think that the part that you touched on there at the end is one that I think is really important, is that if you work with the five Dynamics apps that we talked about in our last episode, you're working with model-driven apps, right? And I think that's really important for people to understand. And that's like, for our team, we say all the time, we work in the Power Platform every day because we work in Power Apps every day because, you know, and so I really like that call out, Liz.
Yeah. And I personally think model-driven apps are way easier because of my CRM background, but I was actually just working with a newer person in the system. And she actually ramped up on Canvas apps first and thought Canvas apps were easier because she's not coming with that background. And so I think that was a really interesting eye-opening moment for me of like, oh, model-driven apps aren't easy for everyone. They're easy for legacy CRM people. So I thought that was really interesting.
It's true because model-driven apps are so static, right? Like you said, Liz, you can't change the interface. You can't, I mean, it comes with so much that's just, you can't change and it's just there. Where I could see somebody who is coming in to the space, whether or not they even have like a technical background, there's so much flexibility with a Canvas app that they're not having to learn like, okay, this is the structure of a model-driven app. Here's what I can and cannot do. Really, you can do anything in a Canvas app. So I could see that, I mean, like we all three of us came in with like the CRM background. So I would never build a Canvas app. I dread the day I have to learn.
Unless you had to.
That's what I'm saying. Like I'm dreading the day I have to learn because I'm sure it'll come at some point. I've just been lucky enough to have more developer type people alongside me so far. You never know. But yeah, I could, that's interesting perspective. Cause yeah, I'm like, oh, model driven apps are easy. I can crank one out in, you know, 30 minutes.
Yeah. That's exactly what I said. Yeah. But if you understand them, not if you're learning from scratch. Yeah.
And you guys, we have this fancy tool that we've done a good job of not mentioning in either of these past couple episodes yet, but Copilot is also available in model or in Power Apps too. And that's just going to make it even easier to be able to spin up apps. For those of you listening, you probably heard a little bit about this in our episode with Ryan Cunningham, but there's just so much AI capabilities coming to Power Apps that it's making it easy to spin up both model driven and Canvas apps where you can, you know, like import tables really briefly or really quickly, and it'll create an app for you and all of this. So it's only going to get easier. And this is a little bit of a tangent, but I do want to say this because Ashley, you called out developers. You guys, last week I was working with a calculated field and it gave me the warning and said that calculated fields are getting deprecated and they're being replaced now.
Power effects.
Yeah. Power FX. So it's like, so we'll have to know a little bit of Power FX syntax anyway, which for those of you listening, if you don't know what that is, it's a primary language used in like Power Apps and things like that. And so we'll have to know it in order to do like calculations on regular fields within CE. So.
Well, dang, I have calculated fields I need to go replace now in my system. Way to create more work for me, Allie.
Well,
and when I have the rollout is. Yeah.
I mean, technically workflows are deprecated. So I take things like that pretty lightly. So
I miss workflows.
Yeah. I still use them. Like if I'm not touching any other data source than the Dataverse, like usually I just do it in a workflow. Totally different conversation. You had said something, Allie. I think it took us like 40 minutes and like 39 seconds to mention Copilot in our New Year podcast. I'm surprised it took that long.
We talked all about it in the Ignite interviews. So we gotta, you know, take a break sometimes from it.
So next is Power Automate. I hate Power Automate. So Ali, I'll let you take it. Speaking of not wanting to move to anything Power Platform related. Go ahead, Ali.
No, I love Power Automate. It definitely gives you some headaches along the way, and it's filled with learning experiences, but I think that's why I like it too. It always presents you with a new challenge, and just the capabilities that it comes with are awesome. So Power Automate is this tool that can take your manual business processes and automate parts of it for you. And we have a lot of experience with this, like connecting it to Dataverse, connecting it to our CE system to like automate things that happen in the system. But the way I even started using Power Automate was when I was a trainer. And I was trying to roll out training, and I had to have people register for my training with a form. And then I used a Power Automate to send my registrations to an Excel file that I had posted publicly. So like leaders could see how many registrants I had coming into that form. So I didn't have to go into Microsoft Form and export my results and email them out to people. And so my first foray into Power Automate was not related to Dynamics at all. And I think that's why I like it so much, is because anyone can use it. You know, I know there's a lot of IT leadership out there who is concerned around the governance of it and everything. And, you know, their automations can be tedious and you can have repetitions in there and can potentially cause slowness in environments and things like that. But I think it's a great way for people to automate their processes. And I would say just check with your IT department on policies. Might be restricted. You might have to try things out. But anyway, it's a great way to really just automate things that you do every day. And there's a lot of templates in Power Automate as well to get you started. So if you've never worked with it before, you can go to make.powerautomate.com and look at the templates that are out there. And it might even spark some ideas for you. Like you might go, oh, if someone submits a form request, I can post a message in a Teams channel so everybody knows what the response was. Or if you have like a satisfaction survey and someone rates you a 1 out of 10, then post that as a high importance to a Teams channel as a follow-up, or, you know, something like that. There's a lot of ideas out there for it. And this is another one too. Copilot is now in Power Automate as well, and it can help you build out your flows too. That's a topic for another day.
Take it all with a grain of salt, though, because I was troubleshooting a flow last week with Evan, and we couldn't figure out why it wasn't working, and we asked Copilot, and its answer was wrong. So, like, definitely take it with a grain of salt. Not perfect yet.
No.
Yeah, so when you mentioned connectors earlier, I was definitely thinking of Power Automate, Liz, so I probably led people down a wrong path. There are just over 700 Power Automate connectors. I don't know how that translates to Power Apps, though. And then you can build custom connectors all the time, right? And people are building them and making them available publicly. Heidi had mentioned one that she and her husband have built, the connectorreview.com. So one of the ways that I've seen Power Automate be used a lot recently, Allie, is with integrations. So integrating two systems, so rather than doing something custom or using a system like Kingsway Soft or something like that, that's like a little bit heavier, especially if you have to put it on-prem or something like that, Power Automate, you know, it's a little bit lighter of a tool. Obviously, I don't think I would use it for like a large, crazy integration between systems, but for something with like CE and an ERP system or, you know, something a little bit lighter, I've seen it be used for that. And that forms example, Allie, was actually the first time I used Power Automate as well, was some people were submitting forms responses and we needed like emails to go out based on those. And you can't send auto emails out of forms. So it's really funny that you said that, because I feel like maybe that's a lot of people's first try at it, because that is actually one of the templates. Like, oh, when a form gets submitted. Anyway, so I would say, so what I dislike, and I've said this a million times on this podcast, is they say that Power Automate is low code, no code. And I think it is heavy code, because you have to know the language of coding, depending on what you're doing, Allie. So like simple ones, you know, like sending an email or something, or adding information from a form. But like, if you're doing like some complex calculations and things like that, there's a lot of syntax from a code, like a developer standpoint, that you have to know in order to put it in. And you have to do it in a very specific fashion, because like everything else Microsoft related, they want you to do it the way that they want you to do it, not the way that it's always been done in other systems, blah, blah, blah. So it is difficult. Like, I think it's difficult in a lot of ways because of that.
And to tie into that too, Ashley, I think that goes into like what could be a whole nother conversation around best practices with Power Automate, is I feel like there's the easy way, and then there's like the low code way. And it can be anything from like adding a condition versus adding an expression. right? And so I know there's tons of, mm-hmm. so like a condition you can plug in as like a step in your flow, and you can say, if this field is this, then send it down this branch or this branch, right?
Right.
But you could also add an expression in some cases instead. Like say you want to populate certain data in a field, you, down there you could say, if this is this, then populate this, right?
Yeah.
So, and it all kind of depends on performance and how many steps you have in it. And so I agree. I think that's where it gets more code heavy is when you start using like variables and expressions and mm-hmm. things like that, for sure.
Especially if you're pulling in a data source that you're not as familiar with, like pulling in Dynamics or the Dataverse, like I'm super familiar with how the Dataverse is structured. But once you start thinking about source, like data from a different source, whew, it, you know, gets
real
complex.
You have to be familiar with your data for all these tools. Absolutely. Like you can't. You won't be able to navigate. Like you won't know what to do if you aren't comfortable with the data source schema and like how it's structured. You have
field
to
names.
Have like basics. Yeah. Like you just have to understand the database that you're working with.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Dates. Doing dates is what stopped me from using Power Automate. Doing dates is terrible.
I've been deadlining options. Allie's set
response,
values.
So if you are not watching this, the reaction that Allie just had is 100% the reason why I hate Power Automate and stopped using it. Because Allie, you can tell, agrees. Dates are terrible.
Ashley, we're supposed to be talking highly of these tools right now.
I'm not, like, I'm saying, like, I think it's great. I think, like, other people, I'm saying I personally don't like to use it. Now, what it can be used for is amazing, right? Like, it can do awesome work. I personally do not want to use it. That doesn't mean that I don't write a lot of design that requires Power Automate that somebody else builds.
It's a very powerful tool.
Yeah.
Brings complexity.
Sure. Yeah. Sorry, I'm not trying to talk Nate. I'm, like, saying I just personally don't want to do it. That's all.
Which it is that crossover from, like, functional into technical, right? Those are kind of the two categories that we work within. And I think Power Automate is kind of that starting to be that crossover where it does pull in some like technical components, mm-hmm. but it also is like kind of functional. So I get it. I get it, Ashley.
Yeah. It's like Canvas apps. Eventually someday I'm sure I'll have to just bite the bullet and do it, right?
And now we'll take a quick break to tell you about our media sponsor, Dynamics User Group. Take your Dynamics skills to new Rocky Mountain heights and join Dynamics Hot Dish and over 2,000 fellow community members at DynamicsCon Live, May 13th to the 16th in Denver. Dive into cutting-edge content on D365, Dynamics GP, Power Platform, and more. Visit live.dynamicscon.com for details, and when registering, make sure to use the promo code HOTDISHINVITE15 for 15% off your registration. Again, that's HOTDISHINVITE15. We'll see you there.
And now let's continue our conversation.
Power BI is next.
Yeah, I was going to say, speaking of like development stuff, I have never built a Power BI report, and that's one that I'll throw out there as like not high on my wish list either. If we're saying that.
So
but,
I
yeah.
actually have built a Power BI report. Out of all of the ones, this is the one that I think that I've actually used. I mean, other than Power Apps, right? I feel like that's just standard. So Power BI, I mean, it's really just in the name. It's a business intelligence. Gosh, I was like, it's in the name, and then I just blanked on what BI stands for. But it's really just a way to visualize your data, you know, really to bring in data. And what I like about it is you can, again, bring in data from multiple sources. Being a legacy CRM person, one of the downsides of reporting was that you only had your CRM data or any data that you brought into CRM mm-hmm. to report on. So Power BI makes it, I'm going to say relatively easy, right? Everything comes with its complexity, but you can connect it to multiple sources, relate the data, relate your sources together, and build these really beautiful, I've seen some amazing Power BI reports that you don't even know are like Power BI, mm-hmm. You know, and you can put it together and really build this cool interactive experience for people to gather information. And it doesn't even have to look like a chart or reporting, right? It can be interactive. It can be all sorts of things. So
There's lots of like widget types. Like you can do maps and heat maps, and there's just, it's not like just line and bar charts. Mm-hmm. Like there's a lot there that you can do with it.
Click like, oh, I want to look at like, and you have like a box, and then it like takes you down a different path, and then you click go home, and like it takes you to go back to the home page. Like it's insane what you can do with Power BI. I mean, even because I worked in Power BI, it's been 5 years almost, which, and so it's changed so much even since then. But what hasn't changed is how you kind of pull the data in. So I will say that's probably where the more developer mind comes in with Power BI is the same. So when you said option sets, Liz, I thought Power BI immediately, because at least from the Dataverse perspective, it brings in the code, not the actual name of the option.
Yep.
So,
yep. So you still have to understand your schema and like the structure of the data that you're working with.
Yeah. And so, and then building the relationships between the data. So the relationships that you have in Dataverse do not stay when you bring the data into Power BI. So be really, so I always say like, you need to be really strategic about what your Power BI is going to do, and only bring in the data that you need, because you have to rebuild all of that structure. But what it allows you to do is build a relationship structure with data from other sources that's unique to that Power BI report that you necessarily maybe wouldn't get in other places. So Power BI, I think, is powerful. You, again, need licensing to use it, but you don't necessarily need a license to consume it. It depends on what... There is a free version. It only allows you to have certain kinds of reporting, right? Like if you do a more complex report, then to consume it, you might need that. I think it's, is it still $10 a month?
No, they've changed that. That's now. Pro is gone. It's now rolled into a certain office. I don't know if it's E3 or E5.
Okay, you can check. That's
they changed all of it recently.
That's
so
great.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I always thought it was weird to like charge somebody money to consume a report. I'm like, they're not doing anything. They're just reading it.
Yeah.
So anyway, so that's awesome to hear. Yeah. So you just, you build it and then in your desktop and even online you can now, and then send it out and people consume it. You can embed it in Dynamics and you can embed it on web pages. So there's a variety of ways that you can even get a Power BI report out to people.
I know there's a lot of best practices around like data modeling. Actually, you're talking about how you have to like tell it what the relationships are between the tables, and that if it's small scale, like you don't have to worry as much. But if you're like doing this on an enterprise level and it's a lot of data, that it can have like scalability performance issues. So I'm not a Power BI expert, so I can't like speak to that, but it is something that you definitely need to learn how to do and like be mindful of how you're approaching it, especially if it's something you're deploying at a broader scale.
Also think about refreshing of the data. Most commonly people only refresh Power BI's once an hour, maybe overnight. But if you're looking for something immediate, depending on how much data you have, even once an hour, I mean, it might take the full hour to I don't know what it's like. I've not, like, to your point, Liz, Power BI that I've ever used has been small scale, right? Yep. We're talking a limited amount of data, small organizations, not this like enterprise $1 billion corporation, right? So I do think that you have to consider your data size when putting something like a Power BI together as well.
I was going to say, so if you're like in the business and someone in your IT team says, how often do you need this to refresh? Just keep that in mind. They're not trying to like shut down anything. It's just that it can be a whole lot of data to refresh, and they're just trying to make it perform as best as possible. So like every minute is probably not an option. And a lot of those really big reports only get refreshed once a day.
I was going to say, I think out of the five apps, I feel like Power BI is like the strongest in the market. Cause like, I think when we're talking about these, I think of like comparable tools, like competitors basically. And like Tableau is the other big BI tool out there, but I'm pretty sure like the last Gartner report or whatever I saw, like Power BI has definitely surpassed it. So like, I think it's, in my opinion, it's one of the strongest and most mature of the five apps at this point.
I agree. Well, I think it was the first, right? Like if you consider all the Power Platform tools, I feel like that or point. Power Automate were really close
Power
together.
BI probably was first.
It was, but it's definitely, I mean, they've put so much money into it, right? Like they stopped putting money into the reporting aspects of the Dynamics products because all of the money was going into Power BI. So The reporting has not changed in CE. I mean, that's what we're all familiar with. Nothing has changed about the reporting, you know, dashboard perspective. I mean, so little, because Power BI is so powerful.
Yep. That's what you go to if you need something more advanced.
Yep. Yep.
And then embed it back in the CRM.
Exactly. Yeah. What's next? Power Pages? I don't want to do Power Virtual Agents.
Didn't Power Pages used to be portals? Am I wrong there? I don't know about Power Pages.
You're exactly right. Yeah, so they basically just rebranded portals Power Pages. I don't know why the name changed. Allie, do you? Like, what makes it? Power Portal?
Power, yeah, I don't know. I don't know. Honestly, I don't know why the name changed. But yeah, it basically replaced portals. And it's a website, essentially, for your company that can serve as a front end in taking information that can send it into your CE system. So think cases. If you have customer service who you want them to be able to submit cases on behalf of themselves and go on and see the status of their cases, or see orders or contracts that they have placed with you, you know, that can all be published out to a Power Page, and you can let the customer sign in. You can do authenticated, non-authenticated, and be able to log in, and they can kind of self-service in that way.
What I find, so Liz, earlier when you were talking about Power Apps, you said that it's meant for internal usage, right? So when you launch a Power App, you know, whether it's model-driven app or Canvas app, it's meant for your internal people to use, you know, in some sort of fashion. Power Pages is what you would launch externally, right? So you'd put like a login on your website, or Allie, like, I think those were perfect examples that you brought up of why you would use a Power Page. That's when you would use, and then I think even like the pricing of it is like logins, like how many people are logging in over a certain amount of time. So that's the external phasing.
I think that summarizes Power Pages. You know, the other kind of I won't even go down that tangent right now, but I think Power Pages, it's another one that has Copilot. And I actually have played with this one a little bit, where I have used Copilot to build Power Pages, and it's kind of sweet. It's actually like it can use all of your branding, and it can spit out like 6 pages all at once. So you don't have to like, so you get your home page, you can do your about me, you can get your orders, you can get your invoices, you can get your cases, all just by like prompting. And again, prompting can be a whole nother conversation, because you have to be super detailed in order to give it what you want. But it was pretty cool. It spun for a little bit, and then like 10 minutes later, it like popped out my entire website. It was cool.
Does it add the CSS? So that's, I'm guessing all of that is something you have to add in after the fact.
I'm not sure. I haven't gone too, like, messed with it too detailed, but I did get the initial website, like, spun up, and I was just kind of impressed with how quickly it went and how many pages it got out there for us.
Power Virtual Agents, I call no-goes on that one for sure. Never even used it.
I haven't either, only in theory.
Go ahead, Allie.
I have used it. So I actually was on a project, and I had the opportunity to build Power Virtual Agents for both chat and voice. And so that like kind of presented its fun challenges along with that. But at its core, Power Virtual Agents are chatbots. They can be for voice. They can be embedded on a website for chat. You can embed multiple throughout your website if you need different bots, right? So you basically can go out to, now you can find them at Copilot Studio. So they are a part of Copilot Studio, where you guys might be hearing about building out your own Copilots and stuff, but Power Virtual Agents are a component of that. And you can go out and you start with a topic, and you say, you know, this is my greeting, this is how I want this to start. Then you can add more topics to it. You can have branching. So like, if a person says this to your bot, you want it to go down this path. It is very configuration heavy, because you have to be able to tell it what to do in certain situations. Like, think about when you get angry with a customer service agent virtually, and you're just like, agent, person, help me, you know, and you're typing all of these things angrily at it. You have to set that up in your bot so it knows what to do. So like, talking about requirements gathering, right? Understanding how people are going to interact with this bot, again, because it can be internal or external facing. So for your like internal teams or for your customers. And you need to kind of anticipate how they're going to work through it and make sure that you're setting up branching and setting up topics to be able to solve that problem. It can give answers based off the data that you have in your system. So if you want to say, you know, when was my last order placed, you can plug that in and it'll spit out some information. So it is connected to your environments in that way as well. And then you can set up your bots to hand it off to a real human. So like in that example I gave where people are like, person, 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 you're not solving my problem. You know, it can actually route that into your customer service platform. We talked in our last episode about customer service workspace or omnichannel engagements. And so those come in as a conversation and people can grab those and a real human will then interact with it. So there's that handoff between bots and humans as well.
With Copilot now, isn't there the option for like the AI to kind of navigate that conversation using Chat GPT? Like, you don't have to like hard code like all the question responses anymore. Like, isn't that what Copilot Studio is?
Yeah, so wrong? There's parts. Again, you know, it's very early, I think, too.
Yeah.
And so I personally haven't embedded any of that Copilot functionality in them, but I have seen some demos, right, where it's supposed to be that large language model. It's supposed to be able to respond like a human on your behalf. I think the Copilot stuff that I personally have seen like up and running is that you can link out to like your own web pages and stuff now. And so if someone asks a question, it can kind of like scrub whatever web pages you link it to and give a response based off of what it finds. And so that I've seen work, and I think that's really cool too. But yeah, that'll be fun to see how that evolves.
Do you only see scenarios of Power Virtual Agents being used in customer service, or would it be used in other like first party apps?
So this is another one. It's consumption based licensing as well. So just like you were talking about Power Pages before with the consumption based licensing, it's similar.
Okay.
So I've you know, seen people that want to use it internally, perhaps. So like if you want to set up a chatbot internally to be able to answer, you know, are we closed for New Year's Eve? Right. Like you can set up those kind of internal chatbots too, to kind of save time for your own employees. But specifically in regard to like sales, I haven't really seen virtual agents there, but there could be some applications.
Anytime you want to do like an FAQ with a person, like whether that's internal or external, like I think customer service is like default, like the most common, but there has to be like, I appreciate the internal use case, like there has to be other use cases out there for it, I would think.
Anything else Power Platform basics that you think people should know before we wrap? This went super quick too, just like the last one did, so.
Well, okay, so silly question, I guess, on my part. Like, do we need to talk about the Dataverse? Like, I know I talked about it in reference to Model Driven Apps. Do we consider that part of the Power Platform, or is that its own completely separate thing?
I think it's, like, the foundation of the Power Platform, like, the database behind it, right? But I don't think it's part of the Power Platform.
Yeah, I would say it's, like, the way the data is structured. But only
separate topic.
Yeah, but only in regards to like certain apps though, because like not like you could use a Canvas app that doesn't sit on the Dataverse.
Same. So Power BI.
It's like there.
Yeah. Power Automate.
It's like a maybe database option.
I was gonna say maybe we should have talked about Dataverse with the Dynamics apps. That might have been a good spot for it.
Well, another only topic. CRM.
Right.
Yeah. Like, yeah,
I think it's a follow-up topic. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Any final words from anyone other than follow up on Dataverse for sure?
Mm-mm.
All right. Well, thanks everyone for tuning in. Next time we're going to dive deeper into why you would use a first party app versus a custom Power app. So kind of continuing the base topics of just, you know, intro level of what Dynamics is and what the Power Platform is. So thanks everyone for tuning in, and we'll see you next time.
Thanks for tuning in to Dynamics Hot Dish, your go-to podcast for all things Dynamics 365 and the Power Platform. If you found this episode helpful, be sure to subscribe and leave us a review on your favorite podcast platform. And don't forget to follow us on social media for even more insights and updates on the latest trends and best practices in business applications and low-code development. We'll be back soon with another delicious serving of Dynamics and Power Platform goodness. Until then, keep innovating and building great solutions.